Frescor Praça.
That's our intro. Hello everyone and welcome to Bioscope Praça, the show where two Praça talk about movie news, reviews, shorts, and some cock in between. My name is Ross.
Now I'm Jody.
Yeah, that's it. Yo, this, I've got this intro down locked now. No, fuck
no. No mistakes.
I'm making my ringtone. Welcome back to another fuck. Oh fuck, I was gonna go into some bars there, but I'm not a rapper.
No, and the show's not about music.
It should be though.
Do your own podcast about music on the side. Get a side hustle going.
So we got a fun show ahead. This one was voted for.
Yeah,
we're gonna talk about one of our favorite movies, and I think Jody needs to get a lot of shit.
Oh, I've been wanting to do chest. It for yeah. so long.
Yeah, but it's not time for that yet.
No.
Listen, Yecho.
Our news and shorts.
Let's get into the news.
Sure. Are you going to make like a new voice every episode? Yeah, it's all good.
As you know, I'm an aspiring voice actor, but I'm very bad at it.
Hashtag voice actors are actors too.
You know the actor Armie Hammer?
Yes. Mm. Full name Arnold.
Arnold Hammer. So, there were some unverified screenshots of text between him and various women that display fantasies of like rape, BDSM, and cannibalism.
Yes. I love how this has been like reported in the media where it's like Armie Hammer, cannibal.
Yeah, that's like the main headline.
Like the SEOs on this.
Armie, that's what you have to Google. That's all you have to Google.
Yeah.
Arnold Hammer cannibal. So, look, it's unverified.
Yeah.
And he has said that these are not legit.
Having said that, he has subsequently left the latest film that he was working on because of the allegations.
Yeah, it was a rom-com, though.
Yeah. Like, who is going to bite the animal? There probably was like some cute lovely. There's probably scenes in this film where he like just like affectionately nibbles her shoulder.
Yeah, just a little bit. So yeah, I read some of them. There's like reference to drinking blood and saying, "I just want to eat you." And
yeah,
I didn't want to admit this. What do you think about this?
I'd like to. Maybe the fans can tell us: is drinking blood also cannibalism? Like wanting to drink blood, or is that like a different ism?
I don't know. Are you? When you cut your finger and you put it in your mouth.
Self-cannibalizing.
Yeah.
Because I always, when they said cannibalism, I'm like, he's eating people. They're talking about eating people.
Yeah. Like Hannibal Lecter shit.
Yeah. Which is really not when you actually go and read up on it, that's not what's being said. Having said that.
Yeah, if that's your fantasy, some weird DMs. I don't want to kink shame.
Yeah, we can't kink shame.
I don't want to kink shame, but also.
Unless it's maybe hurting. If he's not hurting anyone.
Like, that's my thing. That's my thing. If it's adults, consenting adults, and no one is getting hurt, or you are getting hurt willingly, or you do consent, then do what you want.
Exactly.
As long as you're not hurting anybody, do what you want. Yeah. Fuck what you want. Furries get a bad rap, but they're not hurting anyone.
No. What's a furry?
You don't know what a furry is?
No. I know Nick Furry.
No. So a furry, they are a community that dress up in these cartoonish furry suits.
Nice.
And then they have sex with each other.
Ah, like the people in The Shining, in Stanley Kubrick's Shining.
What?
The people from the party. There's the dog. Oh,
yeah, but it's more like, it's more cartoonish than that. So they have these elaborate costumes that literally look like cartoon.
Like Tom animals. And Jerry.
Yeah, no, it's like foxes. It's
okay, like not, anime not famous. Based almost.
Yeah. So there's like pink ones and blue ones and some as big as your head. No,
do some blue ones get together and sometimes it's like pink and blue ones get together and some pink ones only get together.
Yeah, and then they all get together and then it just makes brown.
Yeah. They all shut themselves.
So those are furries. You know, the more we know. So yeah, I don't want to king shame, but these I don't know. I don't care so much about this. Like, just leave him alone.
It's a really weird story.
Yeah, and it also... I don't want it to affect his career just because this is his thing.
Yeah. But it's already has.
Yeah, and he's been like unfaithful because he's married and he's going through a messy divorce at the moment or something like that.
Yeah, that's probably how the DMs are all coming out.
100%. A teaser image has been released for the movie Five Cream.
Five Cream.
It's actually Scream 5. Jody has called it Five Cream, which I think is fucking brilliant.
Yeah, man. Numbers replacing letters.
Numbers replacing letters. Five Cream. So the image itself is just a picture of Ghostface, but a close-up of his mask.
Like. Yeah. And what they've done is to like put some black between the top of his mouth and the bottom part. So they've got the V for five.
Yeah.
With the chin and the lower lip of Ghostface.
Is that right? Is this cropped?
There, you can see. That's cropped, yes. Where's
the full image?
Somewhere. There. See.
Jody, that is a stretch, bruh.
What?
It's just the bottom of that. Like you.
It's a V.
It's...
It's like in the back of a V.
It's not a V.
I bet you it's a VV.
Right?
It's a 5.
They should have just said 5.
Do you know Roman numerals?
The first one came out when we were in high school, right?
Yeah, it was the 90s.
Yes.
Actually, no, it was pre-high school. I feel like the first one was in the 90s. Like,
no, 90s. Yeah, but I mean, we were, you 84, eh?
I'm 86. I'm not as old as you are, man. It would be a disappointment. Where I'm at in my life right now. Are you happy with where you're at 36?
Yeah, we do not have time for
this. 1996. You were not in high school in 1996.
I don't know. I don't feel like doing
that. I do know because I was in high school in 2000.
Fucking, I'm sure I saw this in the cinema. Anyway, this movie was amazing when it came out. And I don't know. I don't even know what they're going to do.
This is the first one sounds Wes Craven. So I'm really not sure about what the quality is going to be like. Know, they did get back Officer Doofus. They got back Neve Campbell. They've got Courtney Cox. So the key players are all back. But they also are apparently relying on a young cast. So I don't know.
You have to.
Yeah, at this point.
I mean, if you're going to release it now and you want to reach...
But if Officer Doofus's story is following its normal trajectory of incompetence leading to promotion, he should be like head of security for the US at this point.
There's a lot of people who have that story in the fucking world. Incompetence leading to promotion. But yeah, we'll see what the fuck happens in this movie. Bruce Willis. You know him.
I think I do.
You love him?
I've heard of him. Matching hairstyles. So.
As he gets older, he seems to be more of a grump.
Yeah, he's embracing like old douchebag.
Yeah. So recently, he was at a pharmacy and he was not wearing a mask.
Mm.
And they had repeatedly asked him to put on a mask and he refused.
Yeah. He apparently, this is how douchey this thing is. Mm. He had a bandana around his neck. So all he could have done is like pull that up.
Maybe he thought like this isn't three layers, so it doesn't matter.
He's like, also that doesn't go with my look. I'm going for old twists, and this is not.
Wow, is that yeah. So he released a statement officially saying it was an error in judgment and people should mask up and so on.
Yeah, his publicist was like on his case.
No. My favorite thing about the story is Kevin Smith then tweeted after seeing this. He tweeted, "What a cop out."
Yo, that man's never going to let go.
No. So they did cop out together, and apparently Bruce Willis was horrible to work with.
Yeah, Kevin Smith directed Cop Out.
He does not like Bruce Willis. Yeah. He's been very vocal about it.
Yes.
So I don't know. I just, let's just continue seeing the decline of one of the greatest action icons of all time.
Exactly. He's doing it himself.
Just put a fucking mask on.
That's not hard.
God, he's in that bracket where it's dangerous.
He's high risk.
Yeah. Put a fucking mask on, you idiot. This isn't a movie set. Netflix is releasing a movie a week in 2021.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I didn't even know that. There's so much fucking movies going on.
Yeah, and they released a teaser where they like show the first 27 films that they are planning on releasing. But one of the stills that I saw was Jennifer Lawrence and Leonardo DiCaprio were doing a film together.
Yeah.
A movie a week.
Yeah.
That's bananas, dude. Like,
yeah, but
how?
It's good for us, though.
It's good for us, but I do have concerns.
You always have concerns.
I've got my concerns.
Just let it happen. If it's cuck, it's cuck.
No.
If it's Yubi Halloween, it's Yubi Halloween, bro.
No, man. That's the thing. Netflix already, even when they weren't doing a film a week, they were like more missed than hit with what they were releasing, right? They were operating on the volume principle. It's like if we put out enough stuff, it's like enough monkeys typing for long enough in a room together, you're going to get Shakespeare. That seems to be Netflix's strategy with films anyway.
Yeah.
And now they are upping the ante by adding more monkeys. So it's like... Yeah, how much of the stuff is really going to be watchable?
I think you losing sleep over this a bit too much.
Like, why, man? Okay.
I'm just going to let it wash over me. And if it's shit, it's shit. Then we just talk about that shit, that is, you know what I mean?
But I want some good stuff.
We're starving for content at the moment. So just take what
That's what they're taking advantage of. That's their mentality.
That's fine. You don't have to
giving in to the man.
I'm not. I won't watch a cuck movie. If I see the review is cuck, then I'm not going to watch it.
He says, having watched Songbird.
Yeah. I actually watched that because of you.
I know.
So we're gonna talk about fucking Songbird. Yes. Maybe in our disappointments of 2020.
Yeah. There might be one or two gems, but I feel like there's gonna be a very big miss rate on this one.
I think you need to relax. It's gonna be okay.
Natural segue into Kevin Hart deciding.
Four picture movie deal.
Yeah, he's done a 4-picture movie deal with Netflix.
Yeah.
Which just has Adam Sandler written all over it.
But it makes sense. His comedy specials do very well on Netflix. Mm. So the face recognition is there. People like him and so on.
Yeah.
My issue is he plays the same character every time.
Every single time.
What was that?
Kevin Hart impersonation.
What was that?
That's me doing Kevin Hart.
Wow. Spot on.
You know. Do you know Jen and I googled how short he is?
He looks so short.
He's slightly shorter than what she is. He's like 1.6 or something like that.
Yo, Abby's like 1.5.
Yo, he's a little man.
Because the Rock is big, but he's not like that big.
He's not like super super tall.
Yeah.
He's not.
It's cuck funny to see them next to each other now. But yeah, he plays the same character all the time, and I don't know. Again, let's see what he comes up with.
I think that Kevin Hart sees like 2 billion hours of Adam Sandler films and he's like, yeah, I'm down with this. Look, same thing.
You can't fault him for his work ethic, though.
No. Considering where he came from, right?
Yeah, bro.
Soul Plane, like just doing like back of the woods comedy shows because he wasn't like a big stand-up, and then blowing up the way that he did.
Yeah.
Dude's work ethic is insane.
I think that's why him and The Rock get on so well.
Yeah.
Because they both kind of had the same work ethic.
Exactly. And when you see Kevin Hart in interviews, like his Joe Rogan podcast, he's a really modest guy, and he's...
No, he's not.
He's not as... No, like...
If you watch his final, his latest comedy special, the thing about him is what I enjoy is the self-deprecation.
Yeah.
Which I can relate to.
But he takes it a bit too far.
Yeah, he does. Like, but in his latest special, it kind of... it works, and he talks about being rich. He's like a little out of touch, but at the same time, he's still self-deprecating, which I appreciate.
Mm.
So his comedy is evolving because he's at a level now where he's a kind of a household name.
Yeah.
He can't relate to the same things he used to,
exactly.
Which comes through in his comedy. And I think that's why people enjoy it, and they see the evolution and so on. But you don't see the evolution in the film.
Sometimes he tries for like a bit more earnest or a bit more tatty. But
he
like,
tried that dramedy with...
Bryan Cranston.
Yeah, with Bryan Cranston in a wheelchair. Yeah. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's... I think I told you it's far inferior to the original, the French version.
French Virgin.
The French version of it. Like Bologna.
Yeah. You know? Whoa, what? French Bologna. Ooh, yeah, it sounds so classy on paper. But in actual fact, yes.
Did you buy the big roll?
Oh, you just went to my age, French Bologna.
Okay,
I know it's a staple for a lot of people, but me growing up, my mother didn't believe in it.
Sandwich ham?
Not even. We weren't rich, motherfucker. We just didn't eat bologna.
Sandwich ham and French bologna is like the cheapy options.
Sandwich ham is a bit classier than French bologna.
Slightly.
It's a little less processed.
Yeah, less hoof, more ear.
Yeah.
You know?
Afal is afal, bro.
Sec, it's time for a review.
All right, so Jody and I wanted to review a sci-fi thriller.
Yeah.
We put it to a vote on Instagram. It was between Source Code, Looper, and Inception.
Yebo.
And Inception won.
Inception won. It was pretty tight, but Inception did win.
Yeah, you are very happy about that.
I kind of did this whole thing because I wanted to review Inception.
Look, I would have rigged it also because I feel like Jody just needs to get this out of his system. He needs to get this Christopher Nolan Inception.
This will be the last one.
Fucking shit out of his system. So this is a cathartic experience.
It's going to be so cathartic.
And I think you should lead us off.
I shall.
Let's go. Let's do it.
So Inception, directed by Christopher Nolan, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Tom Hardy, and who else do we want to name? Marion Cotillard.
Cotillard.
And Ken Watanabe. Yeah, I think
do the Asian one. You could do the French one,
but not the Asian.
Not the Asian one.
Okay.
Otherwise, you have to go. Ken Watanabe,
let them fight.
Ken Watanabe-san, Gojira, let them fight. Let them fight.
So
Ken Watanabe is amazing in your mind.
He's awesome. He'll be in my fun facts. So, Cobb steals information from his targets by entering their dreams. Sato offers to wipe clean Cobb's criminal history as payment for performing an inception on his sick competitor's son. Do you think that works as a synopsis for this film?
Nah, I think it's an undersell.
It confuses the thing more than anything.
Yeah, that's a major undersell. I love this movie.
This is my favorite Christopher Nolan film. I think this was when we had peak Nolan in a good way.
Because this is great Nolan with a big budget.
Great Nolan with a big budget and a very original concept.
Yeah.
I can remember seeing the trailer for the first time and being completely mystified by what the actual plot was.
Well, he gives nothing away.
And this was probably one of the first times, for me, where I saw that, where it's like, I have no idea what this film's about, but I do want to go check it out. It looks pretty epic. And maybe I'll talk about like those feelings for me first, because I can remember seeing it at the cinema. I can remember going to the cinema the next day again and seeing it with different friends. I can remember how blown away I was. Yo, that was no. That was like the first night I saw it on discount.
This was 2010.
Yes, the first night I saw it on discount at the one cinema, and the next night on discount at Grand West. So it was all.
Like Grand West. They were like solid, cinema. How much was the movie there?
It was much cheaper because they used to much be cheaper, stars.
Yeah, stars,
and then they became thingy.
We used to go watch movies there. All the
they
time.
Were good quality. Such a good
R.I.P.
fresh popcorn. Anyway, I remember how amazed I was by this film. Seeing it at the cinema. I don't think many films have affected me quite as much as this one did, just in terms of a cinematic experience. Do you remember what it was like for you?
Yeah, it was dope.
It was so dope.
No, same kind of situation. It was so original and it was so epic. The music, the action, the scale of it, it honestly blew me away. I think it was kind of similar to watching The Matrix for the first time. Same type of
impact.
Yeah.
I agree.
So, I'm with you, bro.
It totally all came
I don't together. Know if I watched it like 2 days in a row, but...
No, I did it 2 days in a row, dude.
Yeah. No, you need to chill.
I was buzzing, bro. I was buzzing.
All right. Jody just ejaculated on the floor. But we're going to carry on. It's fine.
Just lighting a cigarette.
So, yeah. How do you want to do this? I'm sure most people have seen it.
I don't think we need to give a spoiler warning. This film's old enough that if you haven't seen it, why are you even listening?
Yeah, just go home.
Just come home.
Yes. Okay. You drive it because this is your cool, man. This is your thing, bro.
The cast itself is pretty amazing. Yeah. I think that Christopher Nolan, this is probably his best ensemble he's done so far.
He cast Leonardo DiCaprio. He was always going to be Cobb.
Yes.
And then they basically cast everyone else around Leonardo DiCaprio.
Can we also pepper in random fun facts as we go? Because I think they might organically fit in.
Fucking up to you.
So Leonardo DiCaprio was cast first, and he did a ton of work with Christopher Nolan and his wife on the story.
Yeah, like months of work.
Yeah, months of work building out the Cobb character.
Yeah.
Also making it more relatable, which is often an issue with Christopher Nolan's movies, is that it's too cerebral.
But that's the thing. So he worked on the script with him to make it a more character-driven story.
Exactly, more human.
That's what was missing from Tenet. So he didn't have this with Tenet.
Exactly. Or with Interstellar to a degree.
My bro, fuck you. I'm not watching Interstellar anyway. But it works so well in Inception.
Exactly.
And you can see the effect of the month spent working on the script.
Exactly. So story-wise, we get thrown right into the dream world, literally. No, the start of this movie.
We watched it like last night. Mm. And my wife, who watches movies and then instantly forgets them, she was watching it and she's like, "Yo, the pace is hectic, eh?"
Yeah.
But yeah, they you in it, and the movie goes at such a liquor pace, but you're not lost.
Mm.
Like you have some questions and so on that are sort of revealed to you, but the pace, I think, is one of the strengths of this movie.
It is. We see things unfolding and things happening, and we are a bit lost in the beginning, but there is so much exposition throughout this movie. Kind of to a fault, almost, I think, where they, even in the last few scenes, there's still exposition happening. The action sequences look very interesting immediately.
Yeah.
It grabs you.
I'll say this about Nolan, though. He's not good at hand-to-hand stuff.
No.
So on a smaller scale action, when it's like guys fighting and stuff, he's not, the editing is always a little bit choppy.
Yeah.
You can't necessarily see.
Yeah.
It's not done that well, but he's very good at huge action set pieces. Mm. Yeah.
And that is shown to us immediately as well with Saito's dreams and what happens in them. We are also immediately given a sense of urgency at everyone's situation, mainly Cobb's, in that you can see he's desperate, but we don't quite know what's going on and why. You can see that the people that he works with are also a bit frustrated with the situation.
Yeah.
There's a lot of tension and there's a lot of breathless action immediately. And then they show us, okay, this is how the movie's going to unfold. This is the point. This is the plot.
Yeah.
This is what's happening. This is how the dreams work and all of that. It's all incorporated very well.
They show you what they can show you and they explain what they have to explain.
Yeah. And the basic premise of this is the army had started using this technology in order to train soldiers in dreams so that people don't actually die.
Makes them okay with killing.
Yes.
It's kind of dark.
Exactly. So they become desensitized, but they also don't lose people in training and they could do quite hectic things. Then
which does come into play, sorry to cut your word, because in the dream world everybody seems to be quite adept with weapons and combat and so on.
Yeah.
You kind of have to suspend it a bit because you would think that you could do things in your dreams that you can't do in their life.
And what we could, I guess it's almost implied, but for those who dream a lot, like that character, what's Yusuf. That guy? Yusuf, like Cobb, like Arthur, for those who go into the dreams a lot, they've experienced so many different things because they're in control of what they're doing.
Yeah.
So maybe they spend hours doing GTA style shit in their dreams.
Or Neo learning Kung Fu.
Exactly. Then that same technology ends up being used by corporate spies in order to steal.
Yeah, corporate espionage. Yeah, that's essentially what Cobb's does. He goes in to steal information.
He steals information. Mm. The start of the movie is basically Saito actually testing them out, right?
Yeah.
And them failing.
But they don't know that. But Saito was impressed because they were two levels to the dream.
Yeah, which a lot of people didn't know.
Yeah.
So that means that you are having a dream within a dream. Which obviously comes into play.
Yeah, with different host brains.
Yes.
Yeah, which is quite cool. Yes. Don't think about it too much.
Don't think about much too much in this dream. So then we move on to the point of the movie, which is Saito hiring Cobb and a team to not just go and steal information, but to incept.
Yeah.
And so Ross, maybe you can give us
his goal is to basically for his main competitor in this industry, the energy industry. They are on the verge of becoming the global monopoly for the energy. Mm. You don't really get into it. You don't need to.
Yeah.
And he wants to incept the idea into the son of the head of the company that is on his deathbed to break up the corporation.
Which he needs.
He needs that to happen. If that doesn't happen. That they don't gain the monopoly.
Yeah.
So Saito tells Cobb he can get him back into the US, no questions asked.
Yes.
Yeah. He can tell that all he wants to do is go home.
Yes.
Because that's what piques his interest.
Exactly.
Saito tells him, I can get you back.
Exactly.
And he's like, okay, how complex is the idea?
Yeah.
And Cobb is the only one who is positive about this. He's the only one that says it is possible.
Yes.
You have to trick the person into thinking that they came up with this idea themselves, which is super difficult. Because one of the examples that Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, Arthur, he says, if I tell you not to think about elephants,
you will think of
elephants.
Exactly. So, which is based on the real life psychological experiment.
Yeah, yeah. And basically, they have no budget.
Yeah.
Saito is like,
There's literally no limit to what they can do. I mean, one of the offhand references that they give at some point in the film is like, I bought the airline.
Yeah.
Because they like
needed. It seems like a small price.
Yeah. So Cobb then goes out, assembles his team.
Which is, that's my favorite part of this thing. It's essentially a heist movie.
Yes. It's a heist
movie. Which I love.
Set in dreams.
I fucking love heist movies.
Yeah. Unlike Rick and Morty.
The team itself is so good.
It's my favorite ensemble.
All the characters are super likable, and they all bring their unique skill to them. No one is like, you could have done without that guy. Everybody's an integral part of the team.
We have Tom Hardy as Eames in the clearest, most eloquent role I've ever seen.
I love him.
I just love that he doesn't mumble in this role like he does in all his other stuff.
It's fine. It's a Christopher Nolan movie, which is...
Yeah. Exactly. We've got Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Arthur. We've got now Elliot Page as Ariadne.
Yeah.
Michael Caine in a small role.
He has 3 minutes of screen time.
I know, and he got paid a shitload. And he was hyped. He was billed as one of the leads.
Yeah, he was like on the poster, which is quite funny. And then... Michael Caine saying Michael Caine sounds like my cocaine.
My cocaine. bringing you all the useful information.
It's me, my cocaine. Anyway,
Mr. Wayne.
3 minutes of screen time, totally worth it though. He's amazing in it.
Yeah, he is. Everyone's important.
He's so good that he tricks you into thinking that he's on screen more.
He's on in real life, it's 3 minutes, but in the dream world,
three hours.
So, like you said, each one of those characters plays a
Ken Watanabe as Saito, also very good. Amazing suits.
Yes.
Oh, Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah,
he actually showed up to his audition in a suit.
Without knowing that
it was just in case.
Yeah. And it's so integral. His character is probably the one who's the most put together in terms of his clothing the whole time.
Yeah.
Where the others were like.
But he's also the most structured character in his.
Exactly. He's like the straight character here in terms of the one who's like, no, these are the rules. So once the team's assembled, we then move straight into the whole. That's where all the exposition starts, right? Because we have Ariadne, who's like our proxy, who's the one who's being taught everything.
Yeah.
They teach us the rules of the dream world, how worlds are built, what the purpose is of what they do and how they do it.
When Nolan was pitching a movie to the studio, he basically had to reassure them that people would be able to tell the difference between the levels of the dreams.
Yeah.
And I think he pulls that off perfectly.
Did you hear what they did in China?
Yeah, they had to put
in, they put it they, like in the top corner. Yeah. They like had like, you are now on level 2. Wow. You're now on level 3.
Shame. But it's so easy to follow for me.
I mean,
I'm not saying I'm fucking smart or anything, but I feel like
the worlds are so distinct.
You have the snowy level, you have the brown sort of hotel level, you have the other level where they basically driving in a van. Like,
yeah, the first level where they're coming and it's raining, the second level where
it's raining because Yusuf needs to pee.
He has a pee. So, top tip, if it's raining in your dream, don't pee.
Yeah.
Don't pee in that dream.
Don't. You know that dream where you walk to the toilet?
Don't.
Do it.
You're going to piss the
pee. Yeah, you're going to pull a Liam Neeson.
That's a joke that Yusuf gives
me. It really does.
What we do see throughout is that Leonardo DiCaprio... In dreams, when he's in dreams with people, we have what seems to be this character who comes out of left field called Mal, who just kills whoever he's with.
Mal is or very just causes aggressive.
Shenanigans.
Yeah, yeah, she's very aggressive.
She's the reason that the first mission in Saito's dreams doesn't work out in the end.
Super disruptive.
Yes, and we don't quite know what all of that means at that point.
She is a bitchy Mal.
Is by a Mal. But she is brilliant in this role.
Yeah, you believe that she is disgruntled.
Yeah. Also, not a lot of screen time, not a huge amount, but what screen time she has She just makes it work completely.
She's so good, man.
Yeah, dude, I think at this point, let's dive into the dreams, into the second half of this movie.
Yeah, so Christopher Nolan is obsessed with time. And one of the cool things is that you said is there's always a ticking clock somewhere. Everything is time sensitive. Mm-hmm. So you now have enough time to learn the concept of it, and they assemble the team, and then the father dies, the head of the other company.
Yes.
He dies. And it has to happen.
And now they've got to do the mission. Yeah. They were thinking of different ideas, like does he have any surgeries coming up? The longest time that he would be in a confined space was his flight from Sydney to Los Angeles.
Also, like one of the videos that we watched, that is the perfect way to work in a team is when they're brainstorming stuff and they like presenting. One person presents a problem and then they figure out, okay, this is the solution. This is how we're going to fix that. I fucking love
that. Also, that whole creative process of giving an idea and they're like, no, that's a bad idea.
And you're like, okay.
And you don't take it personally. Yeah,
you just carry on.
It's brilliant.
Don't be holy about anything.
Yeah. So I think that, like you said, is brilliant.
It's amazing. So then they hit the first level in Yusuf's mind. So it's in this first level that they discover that Fisher, who is played by Cillian Murphy,
I have to give a shout out to him as well.
Yeah, very, very good. Mm-hmm. He actually has defenses in place for this very thing.
So what the corporations then did is to train their different important staff members as to how to defend yourself if
in your dream, subconsciously.
You figure out, yeah.
Okay, so the mercenaries are there and they're in a gunfight.
Yeah.
They did not expect a gunfight.
They did not. And Saito gets shot.
Yeah, Saito gets shot, which again... Puts time pressure on everything.
Exactly. Yeah. So in other missions, we've seen where Dom actually kills Arthur, for example, to get him out of a difficult situation.
Yeah.
In this one, we discover that because of the formula that Yusuf has created in order for them to go so deep into dreams, you cannot just kill someone in the dream because they will just go into...
limbo.
Which is the deepest level of consciousness.
It's just raw subconscious.
Yeah.
And it's actually made from dreams that are shared. So... Mm. Other people could have both things in this area of dream, basically. Yeah. So Cobb
is the only one.
Is the only one that has been to limbo before.
Yeah. And maybe at this
time also works like super. Like it's almost infinite in limbo.
Yes, in limbo.
You can grow old in limbo.
Exactly. We then find out that Mal is Cobb's former wife who has passed away.
Yeah.
And Mal and Cobb got stuck there.
You can do anything there.
There was no one monitoring them in the real world.
Imagination can run wild and you can just go nuts.
And an important thing that we've left out is that it also becomes very difficult for people who explore in these worlds all the time to know when they are in the real world or in a dream.
Yeah.
And the way that you get around that is by having a totem, which is something that is unique to you. It's a little item that you keep on you all the time, which behaves in a certain way when you're in the real world and in a different way in the dream. So Cobb and Mal get completely stuck in limbo because Mal hides her own totem away from herself because she doesn't want to leave that world.
Yeah,
she's happy with where she is. Cobb then actually does the original Inception on Mal in order to get her out from limbo, in order to convince her that you're in a dream.
Yeah, that's how he knew that it was possible.
Exactly.
Because he did it to his wife.
He's done it before.
And that was the issue because even when they returned to the real world, that idea was so strong that she didn't believe that the real world was the real world.
Yeah.
So she still thought they were dreaming.
Exactly. And that's actually to answer the question of Tintin, which is...
why did Mal kill herself?
Why did Mal kill herself?
Because she thought she was in a dream.
Exactly. So what Cobb had done there was to spin a totem infinitely and have her see that it's spinning all the time.
Yeah.
And this is the risk of Inception, is that if you don't fully understand the concept that you are implanting in someone's mind or the idea that you are implanting in someone's mind, it just runs and gathers.
Yeah, he didn't understand the extent of it. Yo, this is light stuff.
Yeah.
But that's the reason why his projection of her is so aggressive is because it's driven by guilt.
Yeah.
So
it's driven by guilt and anger.
Yeah. So this is his projection of her and how he thinks she would see him because he was the cause of her killing herself.
Exactly. This is also why Cobb can't go back to America.
Yes.
And they have kids.
I think he killed her.
Okay.
Oh, there's no evidence to say otherwise. This is all his story. Yeah.
So
his father wasn't there. So all the evidence pointed to him killing her. Exactly. He fucking killed her, man. So he got away with murder. Jody agreed to this.
No. Just no. So, according to cop, what happened is that Mal killed herself. She left a note with an attorney saying that if my body is found dead, my husband's killed me.
Yeah.
And that's the reason that he can't go back, because there's this murder charge hanging over his head.
All evidence points to cop being a murderer, and I think he is.
I think you are against happy endings. That's your problem. Happy endings are good things.
Yeah, exactly.
Just ask the guy at the massage parlor.
We don't know that. The only way to know is to try yourself. So, do some research for the barista. Go to a massage for
And let us know.
Yeah, just request a happy ending. See what happens.
Yeah, you might get a good massage.
Yeah.
This isn't Mal as she actually was.
No,
it's
because
Cobb's projection of Mal throughout.
Yeah, Ariadne asks Arthur, like, how... Because she experiences it and Mal basically stabs her.
Yeah.
So she's like, how was she in real life? And it's like, she was lovely.
Yeah.
Now they're in the one level, they have to get to the other level. But now they have to create the scenario where Fisher thinks he is kidnapped and they have to convince him that something is afoot. And they use the father's, his uncle.
His uncle, yeah.
So they use his
godfather.
Yeah. His uncle or his godfather?
Both.
Okay. Uncle godfather.
Yes.
They use his uncle godfather as the sort of villain in the scenario.
What they realize is that you have to go deep enough into the subconscious.
Yeah.
You have to build that idea through each of the levels.
Yeah.
So you plant the initial idea on the first level.
Yeah.
You see how he reacts in the second level. And then
he basically gives himself the idea
in the third
level.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah. First level, we're in.
Mm-hmm.
They're escaping bad guys in the inner van. Yusuf has to put them under.
Saito gets shot.
Time crunch. Yusuf puts them under. And then they go into the second level.
Yes. Second level being Arthur's mind.
Arthur's mind in the hotel.
In the hotel. And each of the levels are also kind of symbolic in a way that they help to reinforce different ideas. And it's comfortable places that Cillian Murphy's character would think is real.
Yeah.
Cillian Murphy's character is working with them.
Yeah. Because so he's basically fighting his own subconscious.
He's fighting his own subconscious because he believes that Cobb and the rest of Cobb's team is his mind's defense as opposed to the ones that are after him.
Yeah. So they do that. And this dream level is one of my favorites just because of what Joseph Gordon-Levitt does.
Yeah.
So that is the famous rotating hallway is in this level.
Exactly.
And it's one of my favorite Nolan action sets.
And what I will also add at this point is that this is a movie set in dreams, right?
Yeah.
Very surprisingly, they have about only a quarter of the CGI that you would think a film like this would have.
Yeah.
So I think it's something like
500
shots.
Yeah, but Nolan always
makes
people build stuff.
He does.
Yes. I mean, it's good for the building industry, I'm sure. But
yes. For
that snowy level, they built it into the fucking mountain.
Exactly. So much of this film, as much as it looks like, okay, no, they're just CGIing something here.
Yeah.
So much of it is actually practical.
Yeah. And the rotating hallway works because if in one level, the level above, something physically happens to you that would say a van rolling over.
Exactly.
That will then affect the next level in a way that gravity then shifts.
Mm-hmm. Much like if you have a dream where you are under like a top or under a duvet, you will wake up and you've actually put your covers over your head or something like that.
It's called a Dutch oven.
Nice.
When you fart and
you put like dropped it over.
There was a story of a man that killed his wife like that.
With a Dutch oven?
Yeah.
Did you light the match?
No. It literally the gas fucking killed her. Google it.
Death by Dutch oven.
Death by Dutch oven. So, one of my favorite scenes ever. Joseph Gordon-Levitt fighting a guy in a rotating hallway. Fighting more than one, actually.
He's gone from the guy who's like, everything must go according to plan and so on.
He now has to adapt.
And he's got to adapt and he just...
They all have to adapt. The whole fucking thing is just like shit.
On the fly.
This went wrong. Oh, okay, let's do this. I will say, Eames, Arthur, and Yusuf are working the hardest in this motherfucker.
because each of the levels are their subconscious.
Yo, they are working so hard. So you have Yusuf, who is a getaway driver, essentially, yeah, fighting people. So all he has is a handgun. Yeah. He's alone in the van with a yellow man sleeping.
And he's it's like when you're the designated driver.
Yeah, it's 5 o'clock in the morning. The sun is starting to rise. They are tick safe and you must get everybody home. You have to drive. And they all live in different places.
Yeah.
So you must ride on the M5. Mm.
There's someone in OBS. There's someone in Octavia. Yo, then you have that Brian Tukai.
Yeah. Yo, it's cack. Then you have Arthur, who's in the hotel now, suspended in mid-air because the van is falling and he has to somehow get people to experience falling. Mm-hmm. Then you have Eames.
Oh, can we just quickly mention that the sensation of falling is what triggers your inner ear into waking up your body.
Yeah. Then in the next lower level, you have Eames, who's basically just a fucking Call of Duty character.
Yeah.
He has to run around and shoot people and place bombs in
the
run.
The whole level was based on the James
Bond. On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Yeah. Christopher Nolan.
George Lazenby.
Yeah, you know.
The only time he's played Bond.
I will take the most obscure Bond and love it. You have to like kind of use visual things that will reference safety in order to trick people into putting important information there.
Yeah.
So the whole point of the third level is that that's where the vault is
that
they need to get to, because the vault will have the absolute deepest level.
Yeah, that's where that moment has to happen. That's exactly where the moment he has to give the idea to himself.
Exactly.
So it's like super protected.
Yeah.
Like we were watching it and then Abby's like, they refer to the hospital and Abby's like, is this supposed to be a hospital? Yeah. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, in the vault.
Like, what the fuck? So much worse than Grote Skier.
So much worse. So much better protected though.
Yeah. 100%. So even in that level, fucking Cobb dealing with his cuck. So they built this whole maze so that Cobb wouldn't know how to get to the main room. But because of the time crunch and things that are happening, Cobb says, tell them the shortcut.
Time for a Bioscope fun fact.
What?
So Ariadne's character, who is the one who builds all of these worlds, the mazes, she is based on a character from Greek mythology.
Is this a fun fact?
It's so fun. If you know the story about the Minotaur and the guy who had to go into the maze where the Minotaur is.
This is why we go overtime.
The people always die because they couldn't get out of the maze and the Minotaur kills them. Ariadne is the woman who gave him the idea of using a piece of thread to pull with him as he goes through, kill the Minotaur, and then he has a way to get out again. So her character in here is the one who builds the mazes for everyone. And Cobb is not supposed to see them because he's subconscious.
Yeah, because Mal is going to make subconscious shit. And basically, they are forced to take the shortcut, and therefore Mal knows where they're going to be.
Exactly.
And she shoots Fisher.
as she does.
And she causes cack because Cobb, he's shooting people left and right.
Mm.
And Ariadne asks him, like, what the fuck are these like people or whatever? And he's like, no, they're just projections.
Yeah.
And then Mal sticks eight and he can't shoot them. And then she's like, she's just a projection. Yeah. And he's like, yeah, but what if she's not? Like, fuck, bruh.
Oh, Deal with your issues. So fucking toxic.
So that forces them to then have to go into limbo because Fisher then dies.
Mm-hmm.
And Mal, he's a projection of Mal, then gets hold of Fisher.
Mm-hmm.
So that fucks the plan up even more. On every level, their plan is fucked up.
Exactly. And then they end up in Limbo, the actual deepest level, which is only then populated
because... Also, worst way to enter a fucking level ever. Because they just wash up on the beach.
Yeah, wet, bubbleless.
Full of sand. All fucking groggy. That is my worst nightmare. I hate the fucking beach. It's the worst. Because it sucks. Sand gets everywhere. The water's always cold.
Enjoy the band, why don't you?
Fuck, what? Yes, of course. I fucking love the beach, man. I wish it was permanent.
So, yes, they wash up then in Limbo, which is the very deepest level of consciousness.
And this forces Cobb to deal with his fucking issues for once and for all.
Exactly.
Because it's a choice of dealing with my issues or never seeing my children again.
So, one of the theories I read is that this is also where the inception of Cobb's mind takes place, because Ariadne finally convinces him that Mal is actually gone.
Yeah.
Instead of like still alive in his head. And that
it's not really inception. It's just a friend giving you good advice.
It is. But the idea is that the idea is planted so deep in his own mind that he finally accepts this and is able to change his own ways, which touches on...
Well, I think it was also the choice between... Like, it came to a head to be like, I have to deal with this, or I will never see my children again. Exactly. I like to think of it that way. Like, he had to choose between the woman who is now gone or, you know, his future.
Exactly.
Fisher dies, and Eames is trying to revive him, and then Cobb comes in and he's like, it's all fucked. Everything's fucked. We're done. And Eames is like, oh, that sucks.
I would have liked to see
I would like to see what happened in there. Because he's all about business. Yeah. And Cobb is like, fuck, it's all fucked. And Eames is like, well, I'm not the one who's never going to see my kids again. He's going to go back to his night. Yeah. This is a job.
Yeah.
And he was just curious to see what is going
to
happen.
He wanted to know how it's going to play out. Have they actually incepted this graph?
Yeah.
So I do want to at this point actually touch on the theory that was shared with us by Tony Maneo about Cillian Murphy and his character's arc. Because for the longest time, I actually felt like that was a bit of a MacGuffin. And also that the payoff was not as good as the emotional impact as what they make it seem. Because in reality, what he experiences is not real at that point.
Yeah.
It's like, so what this theory posits is that Cillian Murphy's character is actually integral to making the entire plot of Inception work. Because even though he's got very little to do, he's just like the one that's like everything is just happening and he doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah, he's fucking...
He's like us, the audience.
Yeah.
He sells everything. So he sells them on the first level, planting the seed that his uncle is actually not with him.
Yeah.
And that his father wanted him to be his own man.
Yeah.
In the second scene, we see how his mind accepts that and runs with it. And on the third level, the idea has taken root. His father wants him to be his own person. He opens the vault. His father's in the bed. The picture of them together with the windmill is there.
Listen, wouldn't he recognize Saito?
But he didn't see him at any point.
No, he did. In the snowy level. Well, they together.
It's one of those things in the dream where it's like you random people are just in your dreams.
I don't know. I feel like that is a main competitor of yours and you would know that person. I'm not saying it's a plot hole. I'm just saying like you're involved in this business and you at that level, you know who your main competitors are. You know.
You should know.
Exactly. Yeah. So when you see Saito, you should be like, what the fuck are you doing? Yeah.
It's an interesting point. It's a good question.
I just know how corporates work.
Yeah. You know you're that brother, Douglas.
Because essentially what they do is just stop they help a Musa corporation to stop a Musa corporation. Mm. Which kind of sucks, actually.
Yeah.
Because
that's all we're doing.
Yeah, fuck my life.
Then it's just a new corporation taking over. Back to the film.
Yeah, back to the film. So
for the longest time, I felt like that what is played out as a cathartic and powerful emotional moment is actually quite false. It rings quite false.
Mm.
Having seen this new theory about how this idea is applied to him and how he actually understands it himself makes that much more powerful. And Cillian Murphy totally, like, he pulls it off. Right? Like,
yeah, he does.
The emotions that have to be conveyed with the little screen time that he has.
He's got a little bit of...
Little in that he's... The time where he's active and not passive, where he's not just a participant being pulled around or whatever, where he's actually like, you know, the focal point.
Yeah.
And he does that so brilliantly in this film.
Yep.
Like, just from his facial expression, you know that he feels like my dad wanted me to be my own person. And because of that, I need to build my own empire and I need to break up what he's done and build my own thing.
Yeah.
He wakes up and you know that that's what he's thinking.
Yeah.
Next to the hospital bed, you know that he's feeling that love and he's feeling that grief that he couldn't feel before.
Yeah.
So I think that is, when I do watch this again, I will actually understand that in a very different way to what I've initially felt.
Don't you like that?
It's so nice.
See things with a new perspective.
Yeah. So fresh.
So fresh. The kick has started to happen.
Yes.
So they have to basically ride the levels. Mm. Each level has something that will throw their balance off.
Yeah.
So it wakes them up gradually.
And the kicks need to happen simultaneously. Exactly.
And they use that Edith Piaf song.
Yeah. Edith Piaf song as the trigger.
Yeah. The problem is Cobb now knows that Saito has died.
Yeah.
And Saito is in limbo.
Yes.
So he stays behind to find Saito. But that was pretty cool. So the two of them had to basically recognize each other once again. Like Saito's sitting there and he's fucking 200 years old.
Yeah.
And Cobb looks tuck for Dala.
Yeah.
And they basically, I know you from somewhere.
Exactly.
You to honor my agreement.
And then.
Yeah. And then Saito shoots Cobb. Saito shoots Cobb. He reaches for the gun.
Mm.
He shoots Cobb and then shoots himself. Mm. And they wake
that
up.
That starts the kick.
Yeah. They wake up in the airplane. So cool though. And then Hans Zimmer's greatest fucking score track plays.
Time.
Yeah. Mm. The best ever.
Yeah. Now look, the score in this movie is insane. Yeah, so and good. I think One of the things that I could see is that the amount of tension that builds in you with that score, with are they constantly, the ticking clocks, the references to what's happening in different levels, and how people come out of that movie. And I could see, like, people are jumping around and guys are, like, hitting each other and stuff. It's all that tension that they've built.
And it's super emotional. You were there for Cobb.
Yeah.
You want to see Cobb go
That
home.
Is our, that's our through line in this movie, is Cobb getting back
so
to his
kids.
So
that payoff is so good. Like, him just walking through the airport and then one of the best endings, I guess, of all time happens. You could hear a pin drop in the cinema. Yeah. Like, people out there.
But not a totem.
No. Not a totem at all. Cobb goes back to his home. He sees his children, but he wants to double check that he's not in a dream. So he spins his totem and walks away.
So
doesn't want to wait anymore.
Are you convinced about the ending in terms of you have a belief and you know that that's the way it is?
Yes, I believe Cobb got away with murder.
Okay. Which we've discussed.
Yeah.
I believe
he needs to be punished.
So I believe that Cobb's in the real world.
Yes.
That he's with his kids.
Yes.
More so, the most important thing is that he doesn't actually care where he is.
Yeah. That's why when he walks away, it's basically him saying, I've accepted this.
Yeah. He thinks about his kids all the time. He dreams and sees them off in the distance. But he's always more concerned about, am I still in the dream world or in the real world? So I think this is where it's interesting to talk about some of the theories about.
Ugh, no, I don't want to get into too many theories.
Let's do like three.
No, you just, that's too much.
First one is Michael Caine.
Yeah, Michael Caine has said in the interview that he was given direction by Christopher Nolan that in any scene that he is in, it's the real world.
Exactly. So that's one thing that leads us to believe that this is the real world that Cobb is in. Second theory that is out there is that in all the scenes where Cobb's kids are shown before the ending, we never see their faces. So whenever he dreams about them, we only see the back of their heads. It's the same scene all the time. So in this end scene where we actually do see their faces, it means that we are in the real world, even though it looks so similar to his dreams.
Yeah, very similar.
And then lastly, what Christopher Nolan has said is that to him, it's not such an important discussion around is it real or is it not. The important thing is that Cobb doesn't care about that totem anymore. He walks away from it.
Yeah.
And that's what people should take from the movie. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. I like it. I like that story arc. I like that journey and him accepting things and him dealing with it.
Mm.
Dealing with your past trauma. Him getting away with murder. I think, I'm down.
I'm down for that, man. This has been a long discussion.
It has, but it's one of the best films ever. And Christopher Nolan. Peak Nolan.
Peak Nolan. I think that this movie... for better or worse, has changed the way that trailers are made.
The
sound.
Wow.
The way that sound effects are used in movies as well.
And this was before he started getting wacky with his sound mixing.
Yeah.
So you could still hear the dialogue. It was loud, but you could hear
But you could hear what they say. And also, I think that this really set the benchmark for original ideas in films.
Yeah.
Like in the 2000s. Because I think we don't do that anymore. And this is one of the times where Christopher Nolan ran with something original. He got studio backing from it, and it just all came together.
But again, this movie was better because of, I think, because of that work that him and Leo put in.
I agree.
Christopher Nolan needs to get back to that.
Yeah.
He's getting too, like we said, he's getting too much in his own.
It's too cerebral. It's all too like, oh, I've got a wonderful idea, and I don't care if you guys understand.
Yeah, tell a story people can relate to, and then fucking add your shit.
And that we can hear.
Yeah.
That's it. Do we have a rating system?
No, man. Fuck
we
it.
Love
it's
it.
Inception.
It's Inception.
It's fucking Inception. We love it's it. Amazing. If you don't love this movie, fine. But I think we love it.
We love this film. It's what got us to watch other Nolan stuff for better or worse.
Yeah. I mean, that's one thing with Nolan. We anytime he comes out with something, we're going to watch it.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Yo.
We
what
made
a
it.
Session. We did it. If we missed anything or whatever, you can
write
just
us an
shut
email.
The fuck up.
Write us an email.
No, don't.
Send it to level 2. Go think about yourself. Go incept your mind. Shout out to everyone who voted on this one. Thank you for your contributions. We can't name everybody. I will shout out Tintin, Tony Mandeo, and Malby for the questions that they put out and the theories that they shared with us. Tony's like way ahead on our shout out skeleton. The shout outs.
Yo, he's like leading in shout outs. Tell the people where they can find us, Jody.
Guys, go and hit us up on Instagram, Bicycle Brussels Podcast. If you have any contributions, if you think there's anything we missed, if you think our theories are trash, or if you loved our explanations, go let us know your thoughts on this episode. Alternatively, write us a complete essay on why we are amazing. Send that essay to bicyclebrussels@gmail.com and we will be sure to respond with K.
I love it. And not even a capital K.
Lowercase.
Everyone stay safe. Safe, Jody.
Safe, Ross.